Okay, so our next session is on the conceptual framework, and we're very pleased to have Peter and Rachel here with us today. And I know a number of you actually attended the education session this morning. So with that newfound knowledge from the education session, I'm sure that you can provide some thoughts, provoking thoughts for Peter and Rachel. But with no further ado, I will pass over to Peter and Rachel to take us through this session.
Okay, thanks, Joanna. Good morning, everybody. What we plan to do is to give you a brief reminder of what we talked about in our conceptual framework discussion paper, an overview of what we heard from the responses and in the outreach we did, and then we've got a couple of questions for you at the end about our strategy for the way we're proposing to move it towards an exposure draft. So that's an overview of what we're looking at. And let me remind you, first of all, why we're doing this. When we did our agenda consultation in 2011, many of the responses, in fact, probably practically all of them, said that it should be a high priority for us to continue with the work on the conceptual framework. To remind you, our objective in updating the framework was not to start again with a blank sheet of paper. We think the existing framework is actually pretty good as far as it goes, but there are some important gaps. And of course, there are a few areas where we can make some improvements, but we're not looking really to make fundamental improvements to the areas where there's already good material there. We're also aiming to focus on things that cause problems in practice. It might be nice to have a framework that answers all the things we might want to know about accounting, but that's not the objective. It's very much focused on practical problems. Where are there things we need to address to help the board set standards? Are there things that have been causing the board's problems? Are there things that have been causing problems in understanding for constituents when they're trying to understand the standards and using the framework to help them with that? You may remember that we were doing some work on the conceptual framework since early on in the last decade. We were doing that work jointly with the FASB, and that work was planned to be in 8 separate phases. We finished the first phase in 2010 by issuing Chapter 1 of the framework on objectives of financial reporting and Chapter 3 on qualitative characteristics. Qualitative characteristics mean what are the features of financial information that make it useful to users. We also got as far as an exposure draft on the reporting entity. You may have wondered why chapters 1 and 3. Well, chapter 2 is intended to be the reporting entity. And we got to an exposure draft in 2010. But then in 2010, we suspended work on the framework to concentrate on finishing the major projects, revenue recognition, financial instruments, and so on. We'd also done a little bit of work on some of the other phases that I talked about, but that, as I said, that work was suspended in 2010. So we restarted the project in 2012 and decided to adopt a different approach. Rather than going for 8 different phases, which seemed to be a process that was going to take a very long time, we decided that it would be more productive to try and look at the other phases together. And the main reason for that, really, is that both the board and commentators found it extremely difficult to commentate on individual sections in isolation. It's hard to answer on elements if you don't know what's happening with recognition and measurement, for example. And so we felt it would be more productive and more effective to develop a package together. So last year we issued this discussion paper covering the remaining areas that hadn't been covered so far in the earlier work. So the discussion paper, two sorts of categories there, making some improvements to the areas that are already covered. For example, definitions of the elements, assets and liabilities and equity and income and expense and recognition. And then filling in the gaps where the existing framework either says nothing or very little of any help. For example, the distinction between profit or loss and other comprehensive income, disclosure, derecognition, and measurement. We also suggested in the discussion paper that we would not look to reopen chapters 1 and 3 because that had been through extensive due process. But obviously, as we were looking at the other areas, we would keep our eyes open and see whether changes might need to be made. But we started with a presumption that we wouldn't seek to redo the work on chapters 1 and 3. So what sort of feedback did we get? Well, we had a good level of response. We had 220-plus comment letters. We did lots of outreach around the world, got a good range of geographical spread, good range of input from different sort of functional categories, users, preparers, auditors, academics, regulators, and so on. And that's summarized on that slide. So what did we hear? Well, first of all, I think people were pleased that we were doing the project. They thought it was important. They liked the fact that it's not a phased approach, but we're trying to do the whole package together. There was quite a lot of agreement, at least at a high level, on some of the preliminary views. Clearly, views were a bit more mixed, but sort of directionally, people were reasonably happy. There were quite a lot of comments that some areas needed more development than we had in the discussion paper. And those comments were particularly on measurements and OCI, and to some extent probably liabilities and equity. There are also quite a lot of comments that asked us to look at particular aspects of chapters 1 and 3 again, particularly the areas of prudence and reliability and stewardship. In terms of the timetable, people liked the idea that we set ourselves a challenging timetable of finishing by around 2015. They like the discipline that imposed, although clearly they want to make sure that we don't rush things artificially to try and meet a deadline. But they thought the discipline of having a deadline was useful. Now, a couple of words on the strategy. The board discussed the strategy in April, so this is a strategy for getting towards an exposure draft. I should have said, by the way, the comment deadline was mid-January. First of all, we suggested to the board, and the board agreed that we acknowledge that if we've got a challenging timetable focusing on making some useful improvements in a reasonable time, then we need to accept that some parts of the framework will be more developed and other parts will be less developed. And I don't think that's necessarily a problem. And it may be that some areas might need further development in years to come. But we think we can do provide some worthwhile improvements on a reasonable time scale. Board also agreed that we should continue with the scope. So it's not starting a blank sheet of paper. It's updating what's there and filling in the gaps. And another important point as well is that Chapter 1 particularly talks about the objectives of financial reporting. We decided that because we want to finish in a reasonably timely fashion, we want to focus on financial statements and not other aspects of financial reporting. So we're not looking at management commentary, we're not looking at interim reporting, we're not looking at press releases, interim announcements, and all those things. They're interesting topics, but just looking at financial statements is quite a lot to do on a fairly short timetable. And perhaps if the board wants to look at those areas, it may consider doing again in the future, but that would be a new project and would obviously need to go through the usual process for adding a new project. At a very high level, I think in most areas the board really agreed that the best thing to do was, having read the responses, was to continue roughly in the general direction that was in the DP. But clearly there are areas where there'll need to be changes as well, or where things will need to be further developed or refined. There were three areas that the board looked at particularly, and these were probably the most difficult areas. They're the ones, in a sense, that are probably least developed in the existing framework, and so it's not surprising these are the ones where we had the most comments and where it's more difficult to establish exactly what the best strategy is. So in terms of measurement, the suggestion is that we should continue roughly along the lines that were proposed in the ED, obviously was in the discussion paper, but clearly with some changes. And we'll make some changes in the light of the feedback we've received, or we'll propose to the board that they should make some changes. As I'd mentioned earlier as well, there were some comment letters that suggested that the board should really do the work on measurement in two stages, so do some initial high-level work now and then do some follow-up work involving more research and then more detailed work. The ISB has decided at this stage not to start any sort of second stage of work on measurement. If it wants to think about doing that again, that would really be a separate project, a separate stream of work, but we're not planning to do that at the moment. In terms of the distinction between liabilities and equity, there was a lot of material in the discussion paper, and we probably didn't make it clear enough to people that most of that material is not intended for the framework itself. It was intended to help readers understand the implications of different approaches. What we actually put in the framework is going to be fairly limited. I mean, it may well only be a paragraph or two, depending on exactly which direction we go in. We've also got a project on our research agenda about liabilities and equity, and we'll be doing some work on that in parallel. And the idea is that we will put out some sort of discussion paper thinking about some of those areas roughly along the same timescale as the exposure draft for the conceptual framework, so that people can understand what some of those issues are in more detail. But in terms of what goes into the framework itself, there's probably not going to be a huge amount, in fact. And then the other question is the distinction between profit and loss and other comprehensive income. And the approach there, the board agreed at a sort of preliminary approach, is to emphasize the role of profit or loss, to accept that there is going to be a role for other comprehensive income as well, and that the framework should provide some high-level guidance to the ISB on how to use OCI in the future. And we've got a paper coming to the board meeting next week to start talking about what that guidance might look like. Now, this slide shows our timetable. We're working towards an exposure draft towards the end of this year, and the aim is that if all goes well, we'll put out the final version of the standard framework in 2016, ideally the first half of 2016. With that, I'd like to hand over to Rachel, who'll pick up a couple of the other areas in more detail.
Thank you, Peter, and good morning, everyone. What I wanted to talk about first is the purpose and status of the conceptual framework. At the moment, the conceptual framework includes a huge long list of potential uses of the conceptual framework and potential users of the conceptual framework. In developing the discussion paper, the board thought it would be a good idea to try and focus that list somewhat. And what we said in the discussion paper was that the primary purpose of the conceptual framework is to assist the ISB in developing and revising standards. We went on to acknowledge in the discussion paper that others would use the conceptual framework firstly to understand and interpret existing standards, and then secondly, it has an important role for preparers in developing accounting policies when no standard deals directly with those particular areas. We got quite mixed responses to that proposal within the feedback on the discussion paper. I think there was some concern that focusing on the ISB as the primary user of the conceptual framework in some way understated the importance of the conceptual framework, that it has a much wider role to play, particularly in a principles-based set of standards, and that focusing merely on the needs of the ISB probably understated that role that it has to play. And as a consequence, many people in their feedback on the discussion paper said that we should acknowledge that role that the conceptual framework has and acknowledge that it has a wider role for other parties. At the moment, the conceptual framework is not a standard. It doesn't override any requirements of the standards. And so if there is a conflict between a particular standard and the guidance within the conceptual framework, then people should follow the standard, not the conceptual framework. In the discussion paper, we proposed to retain that idea, so retain the idea that the conceptual framework is not a standard and does not override standards. And I think that broadly had a lot of support from respondents to the discussion paper. A linked idea to that is the idea that the ISB could potentially issue standards that conflict with the conceptual framework, or not conflict with the conceptual framework as a whole, but perhaps conflict with aspects of the conceptual framework. For example, there might be situations where the board decides to recognise an asset that doesn't strictly meet the definition of an asset, if they thought that that provided useful information to the users of financial statements. However, what we did say is that if the board did decide to depart from an aspect of the conceptual framework, the basis for conclusions on that particular standard should explain the departure clearly and explain why that departure was made. I think, again, although some people said that the conceptual framework should be, if you like, a constitution for the ISB and the ISB should not depart from the conceptual framework, I think the majority of responses to the conceptual framework actually said, no, that is the right position to be in. The ISB should have the flexibility to develop standards that could potentially conflict with the conceptual framework, but if it does so, it should explain that position. So that was the position when we set out the discussion paper. And back in April, we reviewed those decisions that we made and the feedback we'd received on the purpose and status. And if we could move on to the next slide, that summarises the tentative decisions that the board made in April in respect of the purpose and status. Firstly, we agreed with some of the comments that were made that potentially identifying the ISB as the primary user of the conceptual framework could be perceived to downplay the importance of the conceptual framework within standard setting. And so we decided to revise our description of the purpose of the conceptual framework to say that it should assist the ISB in developing and revising standards, assist preparers to develop accounting policies where no standard applies, and then finally assist all parties to understand and interpret IFRSs. We decided to continue with the approach to the status of the conceptual framework as not being a standard and not overriding any requirements of the standard. And another aspect of the conceptual framework that we looked at in the discussion paper was whether there should be areas of the conceptual framework that should be restricted for use by the ISB only. For example, one of the suggestions in the discussion paper was that the ISB only should decide whether an item of income or expense should be reported in OCI, that the ISB only should decide when an item that meets the definition of an asset or liability should not be recognised. And it was decided that actually it's probably not appropriate to have areas of the conceptual framework that are restricted for use by the ISB only, that the whole of the conceptual framework should be available for use by all parties who are potentially using it. The final point is the departures by the ISB from aspects of the conceptual framework, and again, the board decided to reconfirm the decision that was made in the discussion paper that departures from aspects of the conceptual framework by the ISB would be permitted, but if they did do that, then they would have to make disclosures to ensure that people understand why that departure was necessary. So that sort of summarises the purpose and status. I'd like to move on just to give you a quick update on an issue that we discussed at the last time the Advisory Council discussed the conceptual framework, which was our overall approach to chapters 1 and 3 of the existing conceptual framework. So as Peter said, these chapters deal, firstly, chapter 1 deals with the objective of financial reporting, and then chapter 3 sets out the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information and describes those qualitative characteristics as the information being relevant and the information providing a faithful representation of that information. We decided in the discussion paper not to fundamentally reconsider chapters 1 and 3. However, when we issued the discussion paper, we were aware of some concerns that people had with those chapters, and in particular, the way that those chapters dealt with the stewardship objective of financial reporting, the decision in 2010 to remove reference to prudence from Chapter 3 of the conceptual framework, and the decision in 2010 to replace reliability as a qualitative characteristic with faithful representation. Just briefly on the stewardship issue. Providing information to assess the stewardship of management was considered part of the overall objective of financial reporting within Chapter 1 of the existing conceptual framework. But the fact that information needed to assess the stewardship of management was needed to meet that overall objective was somewhat buried within that chapter, and you really had to look to find out that that was part of the overall objective. And many of the responses to the discussion paper said that we needed to give more prominence to that idea and perhaps even use the term stewardship because the existing chapter does not use that term. The decision to replace liability with faithful representation came about because of concerns about misunderstandings of what was meant by the term reliability. Many people equated reliability with an acceptable level of measurement and certainty. However, the old conceptual framework actually used reliability to mean a much broader term. So reliability in the old conceptual framework was described as providing a faithful representation, something that was complete, neutral, free from error, was prudent and also was accounted for in accordance with its substance rather than its form. But as I said, many people actually focused exclusively on the measurement and certainty aspect of reliability rather than that broader description, which is why the board decided to move away from reliability and use the term faithful representation instead. However, many of those who responded to the discussion paper said that actually they thought reliability was better understood and should actually be reinstated and replace faithful representation. The board discussed these issues at the May 2014 board meeting, and this slide summarises the decisions that they made. At the moment, it's titled Staff Recommendations because of the deadline that we had for producing the papers, but I'm pleased to say that the staff recommendations were broadly supported by the board. So the staff recommendations here are the tentative decisions that were made by the board. In relation to stewardship, the board decided to increase the prominence of stewardship within the overall objective of financial reporting. Now, some people said that we should include the need to provide information to help assess the stewardship of management as a separate objective from the overall objective of financial reporting, so something separate from the idea of providing decision-useful information. The board decided not to go with a separate objective of stewardship, but said that they would increase the prominence of stewardship within the overall objective of financial reporting, and highlight that information needed to assess stewardship is separate from information needed to assess the prospects for future cash flows. In relation to reliability, the board decided to make no changes there and to stick with faithful representation as currently decided in the conceptual framework. I think the main reason was that the board continues to believe that faithful representation is a broader description than just reliability and could be confused with measurement uncertainty, and so that faithful representation better portrays what they're looking to portray as a qualitative characteristic of useful information. Having said that, there is an issue around measurement uncertainty. The existing conceptual framework, Chapter 3, acknowledges that if the measurement uncertainty associated with an item is sufficiently large, then that information associated with that item might not be particularly relevant. And that seemed to the board to capture some of the ideas of reliability defined as measurement uncertainty that many people were calling for to be reintroduced to the conceptual framework. So it was agreed that during drafting we would look to see whether we could give more prominence to the idea that a high degree of measurement uncertainty might make information less relevant. In relation to prudence, the board decided that it would be very useful to reintroduce a reference to prudence within the conceptual framework and describe prudence as caution under conditions of uncertainty. However, the board was very keen to point out that prudence should not lead to a bias in financial statements and should be consistent with the overall neutrality. It's just a matter of standing back and thinking carefully about the information and ensuring that you are sufficiently cautious and ensure that you don't introduce any intentional or unintentional bias into the financial reporting that you undertake. A final point on chapters 1 and 3. The old conceptual framework referred to substance over form and said that accounting for something in accordance with its legal form, if that was different from its substance, wouldn't provide a faithful representation, or in the old language, wouldn't be consistent with reliability. In the revised conceptual framework, that reference to substance over form was actually made within the basis for conclusions on Chapter 3. The board thought it was an important aspect of faithful representation and therefore recommended that we move the discussion of substance over form from the basis for conclusions and include it within the main text of Chapter 3 of the conceptual framework. With that, I'd like to pause and open it up for questions. Slide number 21 sets out the main questions that we would like you to focus on. The first one is in relation to the proposed strategy and the timetable and whether you can provide us with any advice on that. And the second question deals with the purpose and status and asks what factors the ISB should consider when developing the description of the purpose and status in the conceptual framework. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel, and thank you, Peter. With the questions that we have in front of us, obviously the team seeking our advice, do we have any comments? And Peter.
Yes, thank you. I'm Peter Chambers, and I'm here representing the Investment Management Association of the UK. I'm not sure my questions entirely fit in your framework, so I apologise for being sort of anti-consensual investor at this point. I have two. The first one I'll ask is about the primary use of financial reports. I went to the teaching this morning, which was very good, thank you, and there's a lot of discussion as to who should the IFRS standards be for. Should they be for equity investors? Should it be for a wider group of capital providers and creditors? Or should it be for society in general, perhaps public interest? And I know it's very much the mood swing in recent years to make it a wider group of stakeholders, but I think we have to recognise that it is the holders of ordinary or common shares that are the ultimate owners of a company, and they are the providers of the risk capital. They take the residual risk. And so I think we feel the financial statement should primarily be there to ensure that investors have the information they require to buy, sell, or hold their shares. I take on board the other things, but for primary thing, the certainly the feedback I get from users is pretty clear on that. And as the financial statements are published sometime after the actual figures are announced, one part of the great use of them really is to hold the management to account. So this is where the stewardship comes into play. So we can see how management are using the resources and assets of the company, whether they're getting the appropriate return on them. So there's kind of a dual thing there. So I agree with the comments that you've got from investors about the importance of primary investors and also the stewardship factors. Would you like me to make a comment on the other one later, which is about prudence? Okay.
Peter or Rachel, do you have any comments to make in relation to that?
We did discuss primary users when we discussed chapters 1 and 3 back in May, and the tentative decision made by the board at that time was actually to stick with the primary user group that's identified in the existing chapter 1, which is broader than just the common shareholders. It focuses on potential shareholders and other creditors of the company in addition to the common shareholders, and I think that was reflecting the idea that many people try and use use the financial statements, not just the common shareholders. We decided not to expand the scope. As I said, there were some calls to actually expand the scope of the primary users to include, if you like, society in general, but it was decided not to go with that. So we have a tentative decision at the moment to stick with the primary user group identified in existing Chapter 1.
Igor, thank you.
Maybe it's not a question for the others, but for us, because we are a new country for IFRS, so it's a question. Conceptual framework is not a standard, but it's printed in the book named IFRS. And that's a question, one question. When we translate standards, we should translate conceptual framework, and when we adopt standards, shall we adopt also framework into national legislation? Because I can imagine that with the time we will have lawsuits where we will be an expert and we should use all materials to support or vice versa some views. And if it's not a standard, maybe it should be printed in separately from IFRS, and it should be a separate document not named as a IFRS and not used for, say, courts or what others for their purpose. And that's the question. Yeah.
Igor, I think that those issues that you raise are very, very valid issues for individual countries as they adopt the standards. And what I would encourage you to do is that there are people around here, and I mean, New Zealand is an example that I can chat to you as to how we have done that, with the basis that, yes, IFRS is the overriding thing and the conceptual framework. And, for example, we haven't legislated it as opposed to the standards for the very reason that's been articulated here. But I think there are means that can be done, and I'm sure there are other people around the table that can talk to you about in their country how they've managed to deal with that. And so perhaps just anybody who wants to give some advice to Igor, maybe at lunchtime or over dinner tonight, would be very valuable. Thank you. Françoise?
Thank you, Johanna, and more particularly to pronounce my first name extremely well.
Thank you.
Wanted to respond to the question raised and basically express very strong support for the tentative decisions that the ISB has made in how to continue the development of the framework and almost on every issue, and more particularly those that are presented today. So full support, and that support basically being articulated around the notion that it is essential for our constituents that they have a clear understanding and general acceptance of the accounting model that is underlying the work that is done at the ISB in terms of supporting the quality of the communication and the standard setting process in general. We find that essential. I would just want to say articulate one comment around the issue of prudence. First, to welcome the decision made the tentative decision made so far, to make sure and make the recommendation that I think it's important that no ambiguity is left in how this is defined and its relationship indeed to neutrality. I'm saying that, and I put some more emphasis on this, and this is to help everyone have an understanding of what's going on in Europe on this issue right now. In the framework of reform, prudence will have to be assessed as part of the endorsement criteria. So we are working very as well as we can in order to make sure that this prudence aspect is really assessed as a qualitative characteristic of financial reporting, so that it can remain fully part of the technical discussion and not be interpreted or defined differently from the way it would be defined in the conceptual framework of the ISB. In relationship to neutrality, basically, The idea which is fought in relation to prudence is that assets and liabilities or gains and losses would receive necessarily the same treatment without any differentiating possible. And in fact, current IFRS, in our view, show many examples of differential treatment between the two. So I think if we want to get to the good objective that I just mentioned, it's good that no ambiguity on this issue remains.
Anybody want to make any comment on that, or just take those comments on board? Yep. And I'm sorry, I didn't see the order that people put up their flags, if you like, so I'm going to go around the table. Goro?
Thank you. Ah, yeah, my name is exactly Goro, so
okay. Pronounce. Apologies.
Okay. Okay. That the I believe that it is essential to have for ISP to issue that the ED on time and to have revised conceptual framework in 2016. But having said that the areas which you displayed on page 12, measurement, distinction between liabilities and equity, and the distinction between profit or loss and OCI, I believe that they are vitally important even for users. So that I believe that your tentative decision is, you know, that these areas are left uncompleted, or you know, that the not completed in details by the issuance of ED by the end of 2014. So that my question, I'd like to confirm that the all these three, the discussion on these three areas will be suspended after the issuance of ED issuance of revised conceptual framework. I mean that do we have to wait that the further discussion on these three areas and after 2016, or that the ISB will continue to, continue to at least that the discussion over the three areas, even after the issuance of ED. Could I confirm that?
Peter?
I think it might be different for the three areas, and to some extent it's difficult to predict at this stage. But for example, for our liabilities and equity, we have a separate research project on that. And so depending on where that research project goes, it's quite possible that there'll be some further work in that area, which won't necessarily lead to further changes to the framework. It might lead to standards level developments. I think it might be slightly different for measurement, for example, where we have no plans at the moment to do further research work on measurement once we've finished this work on the framework. And we probably wouldn't have any sort of cross-cutting overarching work on measurement beyond that, other than just the normal measurement work in individual standards. On profit or loss versus OCI, it'll depend to some extent on where we end up in the framework, but it might be there might be a need for some standards level development, or it might not. I think it's too early to predict at this stage.
But anyway, that we can expect that the discussion or the discussion on these three areas will continue, right?
It's quite possible there'll be some discussion in some of those areas beyond that, but whether that's at the conceptual level or whether it's at the standards level remains to be seen.
Thank you much.
Fumio.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. So I appreciate this kind of conceptual framework, the project, but as Goro said, that timeline is very limited to complete the exposure draft in 2014, that is this year. So if you continue this project and also the stay at the originally your idea, it is very important how ISP should show us the high-level guidance for example, OCI, liability equities, so on, which still have the various opinions. And also, it's also important that ISP show us the more information that, and evidence to understand how the this conceptual framework review gives the impact or magnitude to the all stakeholders. That is my comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, Madam Meng.
First of all, we appreciate that the board has made significant progress on the conceptual framework. We appreciate the job has been done by the technical staff and board members. One issue we would like to raise is relevant to the measurement part. As Peter just introduced that the board has an intention to adopt a two-stage approach. So actually, I understand that the tight timetable for the conceptual framework, but we also think that the measurement part is really a very important part of the conceptual framework, and it actually plays a very significant bridge role between recognition and presentation. So we think also there are many, not only conceptual level, also practical level, that there are many issues come out actually relevant to measurement. So we think that whether we could investment more time or resources on this part, try to resolve the measurement issues at conceptual framework level, because they are really urgent for standard setting individually or as well as practice level.
Can I just clarify one thing there? I mean, the board is not proposing to do a two-stage approach for measurement. That was suggested by some of the comment letters. What we plan to do is to do as much as we feel is necessary on measurements at this stage, accepting that that might be at a slightly higher level possibly than some other sections of the framework at this stage. And we have no immediate plans to do follow-up work on measurements at the concept level once that's completed. But clearly we plan to take the time that's needed to do whatever level we think is appropriate to put in the framework at this stage.
Okay. Peter, I'm going to miss you out. I'm sorry, because you've spoken once already, and there are a few more. Patrick?
Thank you. We were presented earlier this morning with an update on the disclosure overload project, and I would suggest to take this project into account and clarify a few things in the conceptual framework. Two things I would see are to clarify in the conceptual framework the notion of materiality. And the other thing is dealing with the users of the financial statements. One of the questions that arises from the disclosure of a load project is who really are the readers of the financial statements? Are they supposed to be very general, including the Scottish widow? Or are they to be read by sophisticated readers? And I think that's something that would be helpful in the disclosure of a load project.
Thank you for those comments, Patrick. Mr. And I'm going to pronounce your name wrong, I'm sorry, Sankaraya?
It is from the preparer side. Basically, the whole objective of the financial reporting is to educate the investors and also to give the right perspective over the financial statement to the creditors and the lenders. If that is the objective on which we are working, the conceptual framework what we are talking here, if you see page 16, we are talking about the conceptual framework is not a standard, but it doesn't override the requirement of specific standards. And if you again go to page 19, others column, it has been mentioned, includes explicit reference to the substance over the form in chapter 3. Net-net, if you talk about the consolidating all those things, I have a slightly little doubt. If it is not a standard, if it is not going to give a guidance on the overall standards, then what is that we are talking about the conceptual framework? Why I am asking this question is very simple. If the standard is not followed, from the preparer's side, the auditor will qualify the accounts. If the auditor qualifies the account, if the conceptual framework is not going to be useful, then in what way it is going to be interpreted and used? That is something which troubles me a lot.
Peter, do you want to make a comment in relation to that?
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, the framework's important because it guides the board when it's setting standards. But the other thing I found very interesting when we were doing the outreach during the comment period on the discussion paper was the strength of the reaction to our suggestion that the framework was primarily for the board. And almost everywhere we went, people said, no, it's actually much more important than that. And I think what I took from that was that people really saw it as explaining the standards. So although it doesn't override the standards are written in that context, and it helps people interpret and apply the standards. And although you couldn't necessarily point to a word in the framework and say, this drives what's in the financial statements, it kind of sets the tone for the whole process.
Then the clarification required is that if you talk about the substance versus the form, the conceptual framework is beautifully fitting there. But unfortunately, if you see any auditor as of today, they have to, every audit firm as a technical session, technical department, unless that technical department clears that concept, they will not be, even the auditor who is certifying, or the partner who is certifying the accounts will not be in a position to override the technical department of that particular auditor or that particular firm. Under that circumstances, the form prevails over the substance. That happens in many cases. I can understand very clearly if it is in case of US GAAP, because we as a company, we follow US GAAP, IFRS, and also many accounting standards. Each standard is different. What I expect from IFRS is that the substance has to prevail. That is the most important thing. That, if it is very clearly discussed and debated, and the ultimate objective is that a person can take the decision based on the substance, even overriding sometimes the standards, that is required, and how to address that, I don't know.
I think my understanding of what the tentative decisions are is very much that the standard will always override the conceptual framework. So even if the standard, if you like, is more form than substance, unfortunately in that, and I say the word unfortunately deliberately, in that situation the standard would override. I think that some of the messaging that is coming through is that, you know, your slide 16, whilst people don't disagree with the tentative decisions there, it seems to me that there's coming through to fully explain exactly how it does fit and how it works and what is the value of that. And I certainly speak historically as both an auditor and a preparer in terms of the use of a conceptual framework as it has been, in terms of being there to stand alongside the standards and to set that overriding thing. So I would concur with the comments that Peter's made around the outreach, and that I would certainly personally support it being for more than just the standard setters. But I think that the key message here is that we do need to make sure we adequately explain what we're doing and why and how it will operate like that. Yep. Ian?
I don't think that's changed.
No, no.
We're not into a new situation.
No.
And,
but maybe it implies that we haven't been, or the global acceptance of what we've been doing in the past hasn't been as wide as it should be, so maybe it's an education thing as much. So it's explaining it for the past as well as for the future. Egbert?
Thank you. I would like to comment on the overall strategy as presented. First of all, I would like to commend the ISB with the objectives in that strategy for completing in a timely manner and to continue with scope. With those two objectives, there's also then, I think, a bit of tension in terms of depth of how far you can get within the conceptual framework. And the concern I have when looking at this particular slide is that the timeline and the width of the scope could go at the expense of the depth of some of the complexer issues that were laid out in the discussion paper. I'm heartened by the comments of Hans earlier on that there will be some articulation on the OCI in performance and that there will be, I would say, clearer articulation around that, because I think we do have a window now for making progress in some of these complex areas, and if that window is not utilized, I think we will be struggling again for a number of years. I think there are a couple of other complex items here as well, like unit of account and what is the obligating event and the thought process that has gone into it. And I think it would be a waste if we park that and do not develop it and meet aspirations that are possible just to achieve, I would say, a timeline. So I think if it is close, and if you are able to get to, I would say, a good level of depth, then this is worthwhile, and I would encourage you to continue on that path.
Thank you, Egbert. I'm not going to ask for responses because there are an awful lot of cards that have sprung up, and we're due to stop in 5 minutes. So I am going to see if we can encourage everyone to speak, but perhaps to briefly speak to let the team hear your comments and don't be too long about them. Sorry. Begonia.
Thank you. That's perfect, Begonia. Okay, so I want to make a comment on the reinstatement of prudence. I wonder if you, I imagine you have come across the very wide literature, academic literature on conservatism, because we don't talk it prudence anymore. We think this is not a clear concept, and we are talking about conditional and unconditional conservatism, and we have found out that the unconditional conservatism doesn't have any usefulness, while the conditional one it has. So I wonder if you perhaps could develop that in around these lines. And regarding the role of the conceptual framework, well, in my view, that's a very important piece of the IFRS structure. And, well, it's true that the standards can conflict with the framework, but what if the standards don't cover something? IS-8 clarifies that, and I hope this will remain. Because as the US GAAP does not take that approach, I think that's important that the conceptual framework remains as some key part of the structure because it helps. It's perhaps a problem that is not a standard, it's not translated, it's not included in the European law, but that's something else.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Olaf?
Thank you. I would reiterate some of the comment made before about taking the time to get this right, because it's given the fact that it will influence so much going forward on the tricky issues, especially the time needs to be taken, as indeed was raised about IFRS 4 and getting those elements right. I think one area where there may need some clarity is that it seems, while I fully support the idea that the P&L is a central piece of information, maybe the conceptual framework also needs to make clearer the roles of the other parts, the notes and the risk reporting especially. Because I think when it comes to prudence issues, and also when it comes to some of the issues, particularly for insurance, where everything we do is around risk and probabilistic outcomes, the risk section and other sections do play an important part. and where people are very concerned about prudence and downsides and things going wrong, if the P&L is going to remain this performance measure and the neutral, with a neutral sort of element to it rather than a bias, there needs to be a place for all the risk and the downside. And maybe the conceptual framework needs to make that a bit clearer.
Anita?
Well, just in the interest of time, I will be really brief, and I would just echo what Egbert said. I think it's very I appreciate the timetable, and appreciate what the board is trying to do, but I think it's much more important that we not be constrained necessarily by the timetable, and that we, the issues that had this conversation before with Peter, but the issues on measurement and on distinguishing liabilities and equity and distinguishing P&L or NOCI are, in my mind, fundamentally important, and without that, we're really missing an opportunity.
Huang?
Thank you. I fully agree with the staff's tentative decisions on the purpose or conceptual framework. But I strongly suggested the importance of conceptual framework in exercising professional judgment should be mentioned here in the purpose of conceptual framework. Say, for example, when no standards applies, auditors in preparer normally refer to the conceptual framework for help. In other words, I believe one of the important purposes of conceptual framework is to help in exercising professional judgment.
Thank you. Stephen?
Yes, again, I'll try and be very brief, but I'd support very much the case that I think the conceptual framework is fundamental to quality accounting, and I do believe that we should not be rushing this. But one thing, I think the original purpose of this particular exercise was not to have a fundamental rethink. I think based on the work done, though, I would like the ISB to actually answer that question as to whether they do believe, having gone through this and looked at the issues, as to whether there is a need for a fundamental rethink, or whether this is actually fundamentally where we should be at the moment. And I would like to see that actually answered, because I think that does sort of tell us whether we are on a road somewhere, or whether we should be heading in a different direction.
Let Peter just make a brief
I just wanted to comment on one aspect of that, because we had an example of that in something we discussed at the May meeting, where a few comment letters, not many, but a few had said, why don't you rethink the asset liability approach and maybe see if you can do better by starting with the income statement. And so we did put a paper to the board that tried to summarise the rationale for where we were. And the board confirmed that we'd continue with the approach as it is at the moment. But we did try to document the reasons for being on that path. We haven't done that for other areas, but maybe if we come across other areas where that might apply, we should consider documenting that as well.
Thanks, Stephen and Peter. Isabel?
Thank you. I first want to welcome the evolutions on chapters 1 and 3, even though I think we're not quite there where we would like the ISB to be. I also would like to concur with Danita's comment on the timeline and the fact that there are some important issues out there that would warrant dealt with within the framework. Coming back to chapter 1 and to the notion of stewardship, I think the board should also try and explain how and when stewardship would come to a different conclusion from decision useful, because we've started having discussions about this, and for the moment we're completely failing to find any examples where this would come to antagonistic result. Another point I'd like to make is when you say that, of course, if you depart from the framework, you're going to explain how and why you depart. I also think that because this is so fundamental, it would be useful, and you could see it as an education or training, if you'd like, for the community. But it would be useful if, in a new standard, it was explained how and why this is compliant with the framework, because that will help people in responding and in integrating the thought process. And along those lines, I think it'd be useful in the ED, even though the ISB has no intention of revisiting the existing standards, is to say, where do they fit in within the new framework? And it's sort of, you know, was there a fundamental rethink, maybe, and things like that. So I think it'd be useful for constituents not to have to second-guess what the effects of the conceptual framework could be, even though, even in the short term, there wouldn't be any intention to change anything.
Okay. Thanks, Isabel. Linda?
Yeah, thank you. My comments are very similar to Olav's, that this is, it's going to fall out of the insurance standards on many of this, and we should look at OCI, P&L, and at risk disclosures. Because it's so close to the insurance standard and you're going to cover a lot of this, I'm just questioning the timing and whether it should be after the insurance standard as opposed to before the insurance standard, because you would hate to be conflicting with two standards coming out very close.
Thanks, Linda. Roxana?
Thank you. So, like, just to echo overall support for the direction, it's a very important project, so probably maybe I would just like to echo it's important to have the important issues dealt right. One of the comments I would like to make in relation to prudence is maybe just the fact that probably the ISB should be cautious when reintroducing it so that we don't jeopardize this neutrality, which is an important characteristic of the financial statements, and not to give more prominence to prudence compared to neutrality. And then in relation to the performance, I believe that it's very important that performance is defined, in particular because OCI is more and more used as a category where items are recognized, and then it's important to make the right decision in respect to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Hiroyuki?
Yes, that's right. Thank you. I have a quick comment on the proposed strategies. I strongly support including the concept of stewardship and prudence and emphasizing the role of profit and loss. But with respect to some areas such as OCI and measurement, official rest developed, we hope careful consideration should be continue to be given before the conclusion is reached. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve?
Thank you. My name is Steve Lim, representing Korean Accounting Standard Center. I do believe the same as several colleagues before. Why do we hurry up so much? Okay, I want the ISB not be too constrained with the timeline. This time around, doing it right and sufficient to cover all major issues will be more important. One example is the foreign currency translation. I am quite disappointed to hear that it is excluded from the conceptual framework's measurement section. I think that many countries without reserve currency will be quite disappointed to hear that. Spending 1 or 2 years' time more will be worthwhile. That's my comment.
Thanks, Steve. And lucky last, Hai.
A short comment about OCI. And I'm agree that profit or loss, of course, are the primary source of information about performance. And I agree that it would be very difficult to give a clear definition about OCI items. So I agree that maybe some general principles and some guidance about what is OCI and how to use it, whether it should be recycled, would also be very helpful, because the FS is a principle-based standard, so there would be some general principles about what is OCI items.
Thank you very much. I think that's been a very valuable session, and a lot of feedback there. The feeling that I've got is that there is general support for the way that the board is heading with its tentative decisions. Obviously, some specific comments that have come through that, and I've been watching both Peter and Rachel writing everything down, so that's really good. I think the feedback will be taken on board. Obviously, one of the key things is the time question in terms of whether that timeline is too tight, because I think the general feeling around here is this is a very important thing, topic, and it's better to get it right than to rush it. So I think to take those comments on board, and again, I think general support, it seems to be for the scope, but perhaps there is a little bit of education, both Ian, as to what we currently have in terms of where the conceptual framework sits, as well as in the future, and thinking about how we might get that to fit in. So to me, I think that hopefully was some very valuable feedback, and thank you everybody for that feedback, and I'm sure it won't be the last time that we talk about the conceptual framework. So on that note, Peter, unless you've got anything you'd like to say to sum up? Nope. We might break for lunch, and back here with Michelle reporting back on trustee activities at 1 o'clock. Thank you very much.